Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going deep into a Supreme Court case that really shakes things up when it comes to like congressional power and presidential privacy. You know, those checks and balances everyone's always talking about.
It's Trump v. Mazars. And, you know, it goes way beyond just this one president or even just financial records. We're talking about like setting a precedent for how these two branches of government basically interact.
Okay, so let's set the scene for our listeners. It's 2019. And we've got multiple House committees all demanding access to President Trump's financial records. Mm. And not just from like his time in office, we're talking years back.
Yeah. And what's interesting is these weren't, you know, random requests. Each committee had a specific legislative purpose for wanting this information. Like the Financial Services Committee, they were looking into potential money laundering. And the Intelligence Committee was focused on possible election interference.
So it wasn't just like a, you know, a fishing expedition. They had reasons.
Yeah.
But was that enough to justify like getting all this personal information from the president?
Well, that's the big question, right? That's where the whole separation of powers thing comes in. Our government is like designed with these roadblocks to keep any one branch from having too much power.
Right, like a constitutional tug of war.
Yeah.
So Congress is pulling on one end saying we need this info to do our jobs. What's the president's argument against it?
President Trump argued that these subpoenas were like way too broad, they lacked a legitimate purpose, and were basically just meant to harass him. He claimed it was a violation of the separation of powers and, you know, his right to privacy.
So it's this classic showdown, Congress saying they need information to do their oversight, and the president saying, hold on, this is overreach. Sounds like a tough one for the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. And to understand like the weight of their decision, we have to look back a bit. Historically, these kinds of disputes between Congress and the president, they were handled through negotiation and compromise, not through courts.
So this going to court was like a break from the norm. A sign that things were really heating up between these branches of government.
Exactly. Going to court like this was pretty unprecedented. It shows just how politically charged the atmosphere was.
Makes you think, was this legal battle inevitable given all the partisan division and, you know, the president's personality? But okay, back to the Supreme Court. How did they end up ruling in this this tug of war?
They didn't really pick a clear winner. Instead of siding with Congress or the president, they sent the case back down to the lower courts with some specific guidelines for how to handle these situations in the future.
So not a total victory for either side, but more like, okay, here's some new rules for the next round. What were those guidelines? Was this a win for Congress's oversight power or for presidential privacy?
It was kind of both, actually. The court tried to find a balance. They acknowledged that Congress needs to be able to do its oversight, but they also emphasized that the president isn't just anyone you know, and there's a need to protect his privacy and prevent harassment.
Okay, so it's not as simple as Congress gets what it wants or the president gets to keep everything secret. What were some of the factors the court said should be considered?
They laid out four key considerations. First, they said Congress needs a really solid legislative purpose for requesting this information. They can't just go on a fishing expedition. They have to explain how the information is relevant to their legislative goals.
So Congress can't just say, we need to understand the president's finances. They need to be specific and show a clear connection to their purpose.
Exactly. And the second thing they focused on was the scope of the subpoena. The request should be super focused on the specific information they need, not just a demand for everything.
So no more like dragnet operations. They have to target their requests and not be overly broad. What else did the court say?
Well, the third thing was about evidence. The court basically said, don't just come to us with claims, show us the proof. Congress has to show evidence that supports their reasons for needing this information. The stronger the evidence, the better.
So they have to make their case with hard evidence, not just assertions. Sounds like the court is trying to make sure Congress isn't abusing its power or using these subpoenas for political reasons.
That's a big part of it. And finally, the fourth consideration they highlighted was the unique position of the president and how these requests can burden him and his ability to do his job.
It makes sense that they'd consider that the president's not just a regular person. He has huge responsibilities, and all these requests for personal info could be a distraction or even harassment.
Right. And this is where things get interesting, because past cases about presidential burdens were about things like legal proceedings, not Congress asking for information. This case adds a new layer of complexity. It's about finding that balance where oversight doesn't become overreach.
This is fascinating stuff. We went from a request for documents to a deep dive into the Constitution, the separation of powers, congressional oversight, presidential privacy. And we're just getting started.
That's right. We'll be back with part two, where we'll unpack those dissenting opinions and explore how the justices who disagreed with the majority saw this whole issue.
Welcome back to the deep dive. Before we took a break, we were talking about Trump v. Mazars, that case about, you know, Congress wanting the president's financial records.
Yeah, and the court kind of tried to walk this fine line with their decision, right? They sent it back to the lower courts, but gave them some guidelines to think about when dealing with congressional subpoenas for the president's personal stuff.
Guidelines that were all about balance and caution. But not all of the justices were happy with that approach.
Right. Some of them had pretty strong dissenting opinions. Like Justice Thomas, he argued that Congress doesn't even have the power to issue these kinds of subpoenas for a president's private records. You know, the stuff that's not related to his official duties.
So he's saying Congress was, like, completely out of line. He's not just saying the subpoenas were too broad. He's saying they shouldn't have even existed.
Yeah, that's it. If Congress wants to investigate the president for wrongdoing, Justice Thomas thinks their only option is impeachment. That's the only way to do it, according to him.
So no legislative subpoena is allowed when it comes to the president's private information. It's impeachment or nothing. It's a pretty firm stance.
It is. He even used history to support his argument. He pointed out that Congress never even tried to subpoena a president's personal papers until, like, the 1970s. He sees this whole trend as Congress trying to grab more power.
So for Justice Thomas, this wasn't just about these particular subpoenas. It was about a bigger principle.
Yeah.
You know, setting a precedent that could change the balance of power.
Yeah.
He's like warning everyone, hey, this is a slippery slope.
Exactly. He was worried about Congress getting too powerful. Now, Justice Alito had a slightly different take. He agreed that the lower courts made a mistake, but he wasn't totally on board with the majority's framework either.
Okay, so he's not saying Congress can never get these records, but he thinks it should be harder.
Yeah, he thought Congress should have to give way more detailed reasons for these subpoenas. Like, they need to be really specific about what they need and why they need it and why they can't get the same info from somewhere else.
So no more vague requests or fishing expeditions. Congress has to prove that they really need the president's private information.
Right. And he was particularly concerned about the potential for abuse, you know, because Congress and the president are often at odds.
Yeah.
He worried that these subpoenas could be used for political reasons rather than for legitimate purposes.
It's interesting that both Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, even though they have different arguments, they're both basically concerned about Congress having too much power.
They are, and their dissenting opinions really show how complicated this whole issue is. We have these big ideas about separation of powers and checks and balances, but putting those ideas into practice can be tough.
It's like those ideas were made for a simpler time, you know, when things weren't so politically charged.
That's a good point. The founders couldn't have predicted how complicated things would get. So now the court has to figure out how to apply these old ideas to modern problems.
And they're doing it with everyone watching and analyzing every word. It's a tough job, but super important for our democracy.
Absolutely. So we've looked at the majority opinion, which tried to find a balance, and we've heard from two dissenting opinions that were worried about Congress overstepping. But there's one more thing we need to talk about.
That specific test, right? Those four considerations the Supreme Court gave for evaluating these subpoenas, that's where the theory meets reality. How do those guidelines actually work in the real world?
That's exactly what we'll be looking at next.
Welcome back, Deep Divers. We've been going deep on Trump v. Mazars, this case that really gets into the nitty-gritty of how Congress and the president, you know, share power.
Yeah, we talked about the majority opinion and those dissenting opinions, and now it's time to really unpack those four considerations the court laid out for, you know, looking at congressional subpoenas when they want the president's personal information. This is where, like, the rubber meets the road.
So we're not just talking theory anymore. It's about how these guidelines might actually work in the future. Yeah. So what's that first thing the court said?
Well, they said Congress needs a super clear legislative purpose for asking for the president's private info. No more, like, you know, just fishing around or giving vague reasons. They have to show a direct connection between what they're asking for and a specific legislative goal.
So saying we need to understand the president's finances isn't enough. They have to explain exactly what they're investigating, what laws they're thinking about, and how the president's records fit into all that.
Exactly. It's like they have to show their work. And the court even said that Congress should try everything else to get the information before going after the president's personal stuff.
So they can't just go straight to the president. They have to prove that they've looked at other options and those didn't work.
Right. It's about making sure Congress isn't, like, overreaching, you know, or using subpoenas just because it's easier. Now, the second thing the court focused on was how broad the subpoena is. They said that requests should be very focused on the specific information they need. No more demanding everything under the sun.
So Congress can't just say, give us 10 years of all your financial transactions. They have to be specific and only ask for what's really relevant to their goal.
Exactly. They have to be precise and show it's relevant. And that brings us to the third thing, which is all about the evidence Congress has to show.
So they can't just say they need the info. They have to prove it.
Right. The court was really big on having strong evidence. They basically said, Congress, you got to show us the proof. Don't just tell us you need it. The more evidence, the better.
So Congress has to make a good case and show why they need this information. It sounds like the court is trying to stop Congress from using their subpoena power the wrong way.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And the last consideration they talked about was the fact that the president isn't just anyone you know, and these requests can really burden him.
Right. The court said the president isn't just a regular person. He's got a huge job, and constantly asking for his private information could make it hard for him to do his job well.
Exactly. And they said the courts should really look closely at how much these requests burden the president, especially because, you know, sometimes there might be political reasons behind them.
So it's not just about Congress's right to get information. It's also about protecting the president from being harassed and making sure he can still govern. It's like walking a tightrope.
It is. And this part of the case is really interesting because in the past, when courts looked at burdens on the president, it was usually about legal stuff, not Congress asking for things.
So this case is breaking new ground. It's not just about looking at old cases. It's about making new rules for how Congress and the president interact, especially now when things are so politically divided.
You got it.
Yeah.
And this case, with all its different angles, really shows why it's important for people to understand these complicated legal and political issues. If we want to hold our leaders accountable, we need to know what's going on.
It reminds us that our democracy is always changing, shaped by what the courts decide, what our leaders do, and how much we, the people, get involved.
Well said. So we hope this deep dive into Trump v. Mazars has helped you understand this really important case, all the big ideas involved, and what it could mean for the future.
We've covered so much, from the arguments to the history to how the court tried to find that balance between Congress and the president. But like always, the conversation doesn't end here.
Keep those brains working. Keep asking those questions and keep digging deep into the things that shape our world. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.